Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to Election Day 2004. We're having a bit of a technical difficulty, but we'll be taking your calls. We expect our technical difficulty here will be over in about 4 minutes, and I'll sound a bit clearer. But we are taking your calls today if you'd like to talk about this election, George Bush versus John Kerry, democracy in America, democracy in the world. Is it a good force or a destructive force? Our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, many people know our website, but they might not realize why it has the name that it does. What is the Bob Enyart Live website? It's kgov.com. Why do we call it KGov? Well, radio stations west of the Mississippi have call letters, three or four call letters, and the first letter is always a K. And east of the Mississippi, radio and TV stations are W, like WABC in New York, and in Los Angeles, it's KABC. So here in Colorado, radio stations are K, and on the Internet, the Bob Enyart Live talk show is not a radio station, but it's a radio talk show, and so we name our website as though it were a radio station with call letters, and it's KGOV, KGOV.com. Well, why do we call it Gov, G-O-V? What's the purpose for that? Well, all governmental authority, all authority resides in God. And anything we do that's not consistent with God's will for us is destructive. And the things that we do that are helpful and beneficial, healthy and good, those are things that are consistent with what God wants for us. And God is just as interested in government and governing officials as he is in families and in churches and other aspects of human life. So some Christians think, well, the government, that's a worldly thing. God is not interested in government. He's only interested in the church, in Sunday school, and praying before meals. And of course, that's false. That's wrong. God wants there to be godly governing officials, just like he wants there to be godly plumbers, godly carpenters, and godly engineers. Only governing officials have greater influence on the people of a nation than do men of other professions. Why is that? The Bible says that the law is the great teacher. The law is the great teacher. So if our laws are corrupt, then the people will not have the benefit of the government to bring them to Christ. And the gospel will be functioning not aided by the government, but it'll be functioning in spite of the government, in opposition to the government. So here at Bob Enyart Live, what we do is we study the Bible and we look for God's principles of governance. And then we try to apply those principles to our nation and to current events. So what I'd like to do is invite you to call in. We might have a little bit of feedback here. We're transitioning from one line to another to clear up our sound. But I'd like you to call in. 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278, and we can talk about government.
All right, now, how does that sound? Does that sound better? Testing 1, 2, 3. I think that sounds okay. So congratulations to our technical crew. They solved our technical difficulty in the first 5 minutes of the show. Good job, guys. All right. So in yesterday's show, we talked about democracy, and we discuss the idea of democracy itself. And is democracy a good idea? You could look at that politically. You could look at it biblically, historically, logically. And I think what you conclude, if you have wisdom, you conclude that democracy is destructive, that democracy is the rule of the masses. Some of our founding fathers referred to it as mob rule. And not even a Christian mob can control its mob mentality. The Christian masses lack the wisdom to govern themselves. They can't do it. So, for example, before the world had widespread democracy, as began, for the most part, with America's Constitution. Before that, we had mostly monarchs, emperors and monarchs, and those monarchs, the kings, for example, throughout the European Middle Ages, those kings were mostly evil, wicked kings, and they would steal, they would commit adultery, they would murder even the worst kings, but there's something they did not do. They didn't legalize stealing for the masses. They did not legalize adultery. They did not legalize murder. Now, when the majority gets a voice in the government, the idea that the people should govern themselves, that is an unbiblical idea. It's a left-wing idea. It comes from the left-wing liberal thought that men are basically good. If you believe that men are basically good, then you would want the majority to rule, because the majority of good men will be good. On the other hand, if Jesus Christ is right and the Bible is right and men are basically sinners and the majority is evil and that the majority does not humble itself before God, then when the majority rules, that the nation that is ruled by the majority will over time continually sink down into immorality and perversion and a lack of justice and righteousness, so that the people, the Christian leaders, will no longer be able to discern even the most basic principles of godliness. Whereas for 3,500 years, I'm dating since Moses till today, for example, it was against the law to commit adultery. It wasn't only a sin, it was against the law. Today, our Christian leaders, forget John Kerry, forget the Democrats, our Christian leaders can't conceive of adultery being against the law. They have conceded that entire issue to the liberals, to the humanists, to Hillary and Hollywood, so that the Christian leaders today have, without a peep, surrendered God's territory of the boundary of the law, where God said sex is only legal within marriage. Any sex outside of marriage should be a crime. And as we've heard from Christian leaders, conservative leaders on this very show, by the way, our phone number is 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. There's no conception that sex outside of marriage should be recriminalized. In fact, our Christian leaders forget even that it was a crime, as best I can tell, and that fornication has always been legal, it seems they think, and pornography has always been legal, it seems they think, and homosexuality has always been legal, it seems they think. And how has this come about? How is it that the Christian leaders have thrown in the towel? You know, now they're fighting things like homosexual marriage. We're not really fighting homosexuality anymore. We're fighting homosexual marriage. One of these days, we'll be fighting homosexual tooth decay. We'll completely forget the issue is the legalization of sexual immorality. We'll forget that, and we fight these ever narrower battles. Like, we don't fight against pornography. The Christian leadership in America has conceded that battle and has said, because of free speech, you have a right to pay women to have sex, that's prostitution, and videotape it and sell it. the Christian leadership acts as though, speaks as though you have a right to produce pornography. And so they only talk about trying to outlaw child pornography. And I'm all for executing anyone who would create or consume child pornography. I'm all for that. But it's pornography that should be criminal, not child pornography. If pornography was criminal and it was aggressively prosecuted, we would not have an epidemic of the world filled with child pornography as it is available at a keystroke on the internet. And the kids who are sexually assaulted in order to produce that pornography. And by the way, the Republican U.S. Supreme Court, 7 of the 9 justices nominated by Republican presidents, the current U.S. Supreme Court, and in the last pornography ruling, it was law enforcement against the pornographers on the issue of child pornography. And the U.S. Supreme Court found what I would call a loophole to rule in favor of the child pornographers and against the pleas of law enforcement. Now, they didn't legalize child pornography outright, but they gave a huge loophole through which the child pornographers could march through, and which would make it very difficult, much more difficult, to prosecute child pornographers. And that's the Republican U.S. Supreme Court with that pro-child pornography ruling. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-836-9278 in Longmont, Colorado. Bill, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. This is Bill, and first-time caller. Appreciate it. I've been listening to you for a while, but I've been agreeing with you more and more that I think that you're right. Democracy tends to lead us down the wrong path.
Mm.
And but one of the things that my friends and I talk about at lunch sometimes is the fact that, you know, we think this is maybe one of the worst governments, but it's better than all the rest that we see around here.
Well, okay, that argument is made frequently, that our government is the worst except for all the others. And
right,
that's
now,
it's similar to what is said by lawyers, that we have the best system in the world. I hear that all the time, especially from Christian lawyers. And our legal system is a godless, it's compared to the public school system, it's a godless legal system, for one.
Yep.
And if you look at the violent crime we have in America, the murders, like last year, how many murders did we have? We had somewhere around 16,000 murders.
Thousands, yep.
16,000. If you don't count abortion, which then it's about 1.5 million murders. And when you have one murder, not only we think of the victim's family and how devastating that is, but what is worse, Bill? Do you have kids?
I have 3 kids.
Okay, what's worse? The horror of a parent who has a child murdered, or the horror of a parent whose child grows up to become a murderer? Which is worse?
I would think of a child growing up to become a murderer.
Absolutely. It is so much more devastating to have your child become a murderer than
Absolutely.
To be murdered. And so what we have, some years in the past 20 years, we've had as many as 24,000 murders in 1 year. And we have the liberals whining about 1,000 murders in Iraq, 1,000 deaths.
Soldiers. They're not murderers.
Soldiers.
They're...
Well, it's a tragedy. Every soldier who dies in a just cause is a tragedy.
Of course, but I wouldn't define it as murder.
Well, if the side of a war that's unjust, they are murderers. For example, the Japanese pilots who dropped, you know, tons of bombs on Pearl Harbor, they were murderers.
Right.
If your cause is unjust and you're fighting in a war, you're a murderer. So when the Nazis invaded Poland, they were murderers. The Germans who slaughtered 6 million Jewish men, women, and children just because they're obeying the government, they were murderers. Now, did Hitler take power through a violent coup or through a democratic process?
He was elected.
He was elected. And, you know, the Weimar Republic, they introduced a Weimar Constitution, and it was democratic. So the German people would vote. And Hitler was elected with about the same percent of the vote that Bill Clinton won on when Ross Perot was running.
Yep. Yep, I remember.
Yeah, Hitler got about the same percent of the popular vote that Bill Clinton got. And he became chancellor. And once he was democratically elected, he consolidated his power and, you know, then implemented the heinous mass murdering system that we know of as Germany in the 40s, the late 30s and 40s. But if you look at the majority of the vote in Germany, if you look at the communists, the Marxists, and the socialist, Nazi, most liberals I know don't know what Nazi stands for. And that's an abbreviation for National Socialist. So they were socialist.
Yep.
And there were some elections in Germany where if you look at in different provinces, you look at the communist vote and the Nazi vote, you add those two together, they scored absolute majorities. So that the masses, it was democracy that gave the human race the Holocaust of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. Democracy gave us that.
Yes.
Yeah. And
so I guess.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, I've been mulling this over in my mind, thinking about, you know, what is a better form of government. Now, I know you've talked about it a little bit, but maybe you can elaborate on, you know, how would we, well, not we as the masses, but how would you choose leaders that are going to be just and moral?
Well, I'd be happy
to set up a form of government like that.
All right. I'll be happy to answer because you asked, but it's difficult because I hate to lose so many people in the audience without a sufficient amount of time to explain it. Because you tell if you have something that's true and you don't present it well, you could inoculate people, like immunize them against the truth. And they hear something true and they reject it out of hand. And then for the rest of their lives, they reject it. But I'll give you the answer. The answer is this. You cannot ensure a just government. You can't do that because human beings are evil.
Yep.
You can't. There is no system of checks and balances by which you can ensure a just government. In fact, the very notion should tell Christians, men with wisdom, that it doesn't work. There's no such thing as getting a committee and then getting a larger committee to make sure the smaller committee is righteous. And then you get a larger committee, then you get another committee, and have all the committees do checks and balances. And then the largest committee is the people who will vote to make sure the other committees are righteous. That's inane. And when anyone says that this form of government that we have will only work if the majority are righteous, that person should know what that means is this Constitution cannot work because the majority shouted, crucify him. And the majority throughout history are evil, except for those brief periods of time when there's one righteous leader who takes the nation along with him and the nation repents in the short time of the leadership of one man. So you cannot, there is no such thing as a system of government, a form of government in human history until the Lord returns. There's no such thing as guaranteeing a righteous government. So once we acknowledge that, then that influences, that opens our mind to understand what form of government would be just and what form is unjust. And rule by the majority is inherently immoral. It takes God's principles of governance and authority, and it stands them on their head. And it says that children should rule over their parents. And the people have their governing officials as their servants, which is not true. The governing official is not my servant, only if he willingly makes himself my servant. But I can't demand that he serve me. If I do, we have a nation of 300 million egotists, little tyrants. Like, Bill, do you remember what Mel Gibson said in the movie The Patriot when he was hesitating to fight the British? And
not off the top of my head, but yes,
you saw the movie. He said this. He said, better to be ruled by one tyrant 3,000 miles away than 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away. And that's true because the 3,000 tyrants who are your neighbors will legalize their right to have sex with your daughters and your granddaughters outside of marriage and to use them and discard them.
That's right.
They'll legalize their right to have sex with your daughters and your granddaughters, and when they impregnate them, kill the child, the offspring, so that they don't have to take responsibility. That's what they'll do. They'll legalize their right to take money from you to pay for their kids' godless education.
Yep.
And to pay for their socialized medicine. So democracy, you know, Seneca was a Roman author, and he talked about democracy, and he described it as, he said this, democracy is more cruel than wars or tyrants. And Cicero, about, what, 50 BC or so in Rome, Cicero said that elected officials gain favor with the people by giving them other men's property. And that's exactly what George W. Bush just did.
Yep.
With a $500 billion socialist prescription drug program. He just gave, well, I just guess at what percent of our economy is prescription drugs for the elderly? It's got to be over 1% of the entire U.S. GNP. So he, in one fell swoop, the Republican conservative Christian increased the size of the federal government by an entire 1% of our economy, giving it to the federal government. And why is it that we had a problem with flu shots? Well, it's because Hillary, when she lost her bid to nationalize health care, got in one parting shot and nationalized flu shots because it's for the kids, you know. So the federal government buys flu shots. They're the only customer that destroyed competition, and they negotiate such a slim profit margin that none of the drug companies want to make it. So,
right.
So we end up with one supplier in Europe, and if something goes bad, millions of kids can't get flu shots because Hillary cares so much about kids. And George W. Bush says, you know, that model's pretty good. I like providing drugs for the people by the government, so I'm not now going to nationalize prescription drugs for senior citizens. And he's furthering Hillary's economic model, which is utterly godless. And we conservative Christians, we know that welfare is a sin. And so Bush makes welfare palatable by saying that religious organizations could dole out the money. So it's faith-based welfare programs where the church becomes the middleman and we get a cut. Those are examples, Bill, of why democracy doesn't work.
Yep. Yep. I've been thinking a lot about it. And you know, I grew up in a Christian home, and it was always, democracy was just a wonderful thing. But
right.
As I've been thinking a lot recently about it, I'm agreeing with you. I've been listening to you ever since you've been on here at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, Bill, why don't we do this? Why don't tomorrow, since we don't have the time on today's show, I'll present an alternative to democracy.
That sounds good.
From the Bible, and we'll see where that goes.
That does sound very good.
All right.
I'll be listening.
All
and
right.
My son is listening. He likes to listen to you every day. He's asking me right now. I pick him up at school at the Rocky Mountain Christian Academy up here in Longmont.
All right.
And he loves to listen to you. He's 9 years old. He got a huge kick out of your comment yesterday that even the child has the authority to kick the cat off the couch.
That's right. Authority flows downhill.
That's right.
What's
and
his
we've
name?
We've been trying to teach him that.
What's his name?
His name is Alec.
Alec, you got to obey your parents.
And I'll have him hear that when I pull down the
all right.
The JPEG later. I mean the MPEG.
Good. Yeah, right from the website, KGov.
Yep.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome. I enjoy listening to you every day.
God bless you. Tomorrow is the alternative to democracy right here on Bob and Yurt Live, KLTT, 670 a.m. at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. All right, in Littleton, Colorado, Herman, speak your mind.
Yeah. And he's Revelation 2:27.
Are you going to read a Bible verse?
Yeah.
All right, warning, warning, warning. Will Robinson, their Bible verse up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bobbing It Live that you would like to censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. All right, are you going to mention the Nicolaitans?
No, I'm going to mention about Jesus.
All right, go ahead.
He said he shall rule them with a rod of iron.
Amen.
As the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father.
Revelation 2.
I don't understand some of that. But he shall rule them with a rod of iron. The Lord, when he comes back,
right,
will rule the world
with a rod of iron.
With a rod of iron.
And as Isaiah says, the law will be exalted.
Exactly.
So that God's law will be exalted, and Jesus Christ, when he reigns on earth for 1,000 years before his eternal reign, for that 1,000 years, he will uphold the law.
And the reason for that, sir, do you know?
Oh, I think so. But I'm sure God has a depth of good reasons for doing that.
Well, let me mention just a few things.
Well, real quick. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, okay. I know you're rushed for time. Have you ever used, I'm sure you have, used a public restroom and tried to use a public restroom without all the dirty graffiti and all of the,
right,
you know, ruling with a rod of iron. Boy, I tell you what, just myself, if I was in charge, anybody that would even think of trying to write something down on a rod in a bathroom like that, some of the things that I've read, and I try not to even read them. I mean,
yeah,
I just
of course,
the other
it's
way.
So
I
vulgar.
Just
Herman,
take care of what I have to and split.
Herman, okay, we get your point, and it's an excellent point that God is going to show us what righteousness on earth is like. And by the way, why does God say Christ will rule for 1,000 years in the book of Revelation? Because before Christ's first coming, there was a 1,000-year period when Israel's monarchy ruled from the throne in Jerusalem. King David established the throne 3,000 years ago in 1004 B.C. in Jerusalem. And for 1,000 years before Christ's first coming, the earthly kings ruled, and there was misery and wickedness and injustice. And then Christ came, his earthly kingdom. Then he went to heaven, and he was due to come back. And after he returns, the 1,000 years after his second coming, he will rule from Jerusalem, and righteousness will prevail. So God allowed Israel to have a monarchy with a throne out of Jerusalem for 1,000 years, the 1,000 years before the first coming, exactly 1,000 years, and the earth was wicked. And then 1,000 years after, immediately after the second coming, where righteousness would prevail and Christ will rule with a rod of iron and the law will be exalted. And by the way, that symmetry, that biblical historical symmetry, helps us to understand the whole Bible. And if you're at all interested in that, you got to check out The Plot, our overview of the whole Bible. You can get it on MP3 CD and listen to it, or you can get it in a manuscript, 330 pages. You call us at 800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, or you go online to KGOV, KGOV.com. Check out our materials, our Bible study materials, and you'll love studying the Bible with us. And if not, money-back guarantee. Okay, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. What a neat school. About, 700 students, kindergarten through 12th grade, and over 100 people on staff. What a beautiful campus, Christ-centered. Their phone number, 431-5653. That's 303-431-5653.